Want more content from the developer relations team at WP Engine? Go to developers.wpengine.com for blogs, videos, and more podcasts just like this one. And now, the Decode Podcast.
Welcome to Decode. This is the podcast where we talk all things headless WordPress and modern web development. And today we're joined by a great guest to talk specifically about doing e-commerce in the world of headless WordPress using WooCommerce. I'm Kellen Mace, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Will Johnston. Hey, Will.
Hey.
And with that, we'll turn things over to our guests. We have Jacob Areola here today to talk about headless e-commerce.
Hey, what is going on from sunny Southern California?
You got a nice spot there, man. Thank you, first of all, for taking the time to come on the podcast. We've had many episodes of just us rambling on about headless WordPress-related topics, many others with guests talking about headless WordPress topics. But we've never done headless WooCommerce before. So I think this episode will be really valuable for folks who might be considering that, you know, tech stack for building sites. And you're, you know, the go-to person in my mind. And in fact, the only the only one, yourself and your agency, you're the only ones I'm aware of who's built and shipped, you know, a production headless WooCommerce site. So I'm excited to learn more.
Yeah, first time, long time, you know, so happy to be on, and let's talk some headless WooCommerce for sure.
Absolutely. So before we get too deep into it, we just want a little brief intro from you. Can you tell folks kind of where you work and the type of work that you do?
Yeah, for sure. I'm Jacob. I'm a front-end developer, JavaScript developer at Zeek Interactive. We are a development agency, do a lot of WordPress stuff, headless stuff, Laravel stuff, all the things in the web world, for sure. Been there about 7 years. Just love learning things, talking to people about tech, whether that's WordPress and React, new things. Love solving problems and good stuff. So happy to be on.
Well, very nice. Yeah, happy to have you on. So without any other ado, we wanted to dive right into the interesting headless WooCommerce stuff with you. Recently, I think it's within the last several months, I believe, you and Zeek, your agency, built and launched Rudis.com, which is a wrestling, you know, sportswear and apparel and equipment company online, and it looks awesome. Like, anybody listening, rudis.com, this would be like an example of a production headless WooCommerce app that you can check out, and the page transitions are lightning quick. And then when you're on the single project page and you're changing some aspects about the product, like the style or color or quantity or whatever, seeing details on the page just swap out on the fly as you're interacting with the app, like all of it just provides a really nice experience. So I want to, you know, dig into that a bit further.
So for a second, I thought, yeah, when you did RUDIS, I thought you were throwing some really cool like acronym or something like that.
Oh.
Yeah, we launched, we built that site and launched Q2, right at the beginning of Q2, March 1st, I think. It just happened to be that way for sure. So big project. Let's dive in for sure.
Cool. Yeah. So my first question at the outset would be, how is that tech stack chosen? You know, because as you and many of our listeners know, there are many players in the e-commerce game at this point. So one, you know, real strong, you know, contender would be Shopify. There are other options as well, like Snipcart is a popular one for in this kind of Jamstack world where you want some e-commerce functionality that you can pull into your front-end JavaScript app. That's another one. And then WooCommerce, yeah, of course, like can't be, you know, it can't be overstated, like the amount, you know, the quantity of WooCommerce that's out there on the web. So anyways, for this particular project, yeah, like how was that decision made?
I think the uniqueness about this project is that they were a legacy WooCommerce monolithic WordPress application, right? So they were existing, they already were making sales. This was their business. So it wasn't, starting from scratch kind of thing. So one thing obviously that we had to keep in mind was, okay, this is well-established, an existing kind of situation. Do we want to now talk about migration into a different platform in terms of hosting and all kinds of services? They also had very tightly coupled third-party services that were touching the WooCommerce API, like inventory, for instance, right? So that kind of, it enforced us, but it made the decision much easier in terms of like, well, how much do we really want to take on with this project? Is WooCommerce WordPress as a CMS a pain point, or what really are the pain points? And the pain points were on the front end, right? Things like Google Lighthouse speed, things like limitations on UI design, in terms of interactivity. There was really nothing wrong with the CMS experience. They were also really tightly coupled to a lot of ACS stuff, right? So if obviously the WordPress folks out there know advanced custom fields, we have and do have, page builder stuff on existing pages with ACF. So they didn't want to lose that, ability to be able to build landing pages on the fly. And so that kind of made the decision easy in terms of, okay, let's stick with WooCommerce. What are the options in terms of, great, we want to go with headless WooCommerce. What do we go with? Do we go, GraphQL, REST API? And I think at the time I had been highly engaged with Jason, just doing just normal headless WordPress stuff. And he introduced me to the headless WooGraphQL, or not the headless, the WooGraphQL project. And then I started talking to Jeff, who's the creator and maintainer of it, and kind of got the ball rolling and did a lot of prototyping and figured out, yeah, we can kind of make this happen, and kind of just went with it.
Very nice. Yeah. So the decision was made to take an existing WooCommerce, monolithic site, and then go headless. One of my first questions has to be, why not try to improve the site as is? Because it sounds like what you're saying, speed was one factor, but you also mentioned a few other things there, like interactivity. Like, would it have been enough, or would it have solved their problems to apply, full page caching and object caching and whatever else, and maybe cleaning up some expensive queries, that kind of thing, to get the speed gains? Or do you think that wouldn't have cut it? Like, headless was providing something that just couldn't.
Yeah, I think the problem, we tried that. So it's cache on cache on cache on cache and like everything, right?
Just throw a cache on it. It'll be
fine. Yeah. Double cache it for sure. So, we had page caching, object caching, all the things. And so we had to, realistically tried most things to kind of improve it. I think the problem, maybe because of, e-commerce too and WooCommerce, the challenge is that, it's really add-on, plugins add a lot of functionality, and that's great in terms of making WooCommerce a lower barrier to entry, because all of a sudden, if you need some kind of unique e-commerce functionality, there's a WooCommerce add-on for that. But a lot of times you're limited on control on what that add-on is adding to the front end, right? Maybe they all of a sudden they're dropping in Google fonts, right? And like, why are you doing a render blocking Google font on this thing? And, just obscure things that unfortunately you don't have control over. Yes, you can reach out to the plugin authors and yes, you can try to engage. But when you've got maybe 15 add-ons running, there's only so much you can do. So yeah, we definitely exhausted those options in terms of trying to improve. But at the time we did Lighthouse and it was literally scoring zero. Like, I didn't even know that you can do like a zero score on Lighthouse, but it was like zero. So for sure it was definitely room for improvement.
And I'll take this time to mention, I just ran a Lighthouse score on it now, and on desktop it's getting a 99, which is basically perfect. You never expect 100. And then on mobile, it's a 76. But if you scroll down and look at like what's actually causing issues, a lot of that can be explained away.
Yeah. 76, all the marketing
76
stuff.
Is great on mobile.
I run it pretty often too. And I had certain days that mobile hit 90 and I was so excited, but with anybody just doing like Google Lighthouse speed scores, you know that it's so up and down. Depends on the day, the time of day and some weird kind of thing for sure.
Yeah. And it's, and also when you put some of the marketing stuff in there, it's like, you just don't have options, just kind of like you said, with traditional WordPress and WooCommerce plugin specifically, adding stuff that you just don't have control over. Even moving headless, you're not going to eliminate that completely, but you can eliminate a lot of the unnecessary stuff there.
Yeah, and I think with a lot of the kind of options to build things in a headless environment, whether that's Next.js, Nuxt, Gatsby, whatever, 11t, a lot of those have performance kind of top of mind. So you get a lot of kind of performance goodies, whether that's images or just overall code splitting and stuff like that. So, you know, when you decouple, right, and those that are listening probably know that, you know, you choose something that's going to kind of match those goals in terms of kind of giving you the head start in terms of performance for sure.
Mm. Yeah. And some of our discussions here are reminding me of something that's commonly cited as a con for going headless WordPress, but many others hear it and go, no, that's really a pro, right? And that is what you stated, and that's the ability to add visual elements to the site on your own. You know, so whoever the content authors or content creators are of the site, you know, sometimes you want them to be able to just grab a plugin off the WordPress.org repo, install it, and then add that new thing to whatever page they want. You know, some folks want that freedom and that ability to do that. But in my experience, like once you get, you know, higher up, go from small business to medium to large to enterprise, like as soon as you go up like that, you want to lock things down, you know, even further. And you don't want that, the ability to willy-nilly add things to your pages for that exact reason that you said a moment ago, right? Then, you know, by the time you bolt on several WooCommerce extensions or whatever other plugins, and they're each adding their own scripts and their own markup or whatever to the page, you know, performance can easily take a hit. So yeah, headless sometimes can guard against that, where it's like, you know, what the build says the page is going to render, that's what's being rendered, not just anything a plugin or extension, you know, has chosen to add.
Yeah. And I think that e-commerce is unique in the sense of, you know, this is someone's business, right? This is how they pay their employees, all that good stuff. It's not just your brochure marketing site, where great, you have better speed. That's theoretically going to improve your SEO user experience. But when you talk about performance, you're also talking about like, will the site bork if like all of a sudden a bunch of sales start coming in, right?
Yeah.
Like Black Friday, obviously, but product launches, marketing emails on a Friday night kind of thing, like plug-in in terms of just UI performance, but just overall kind of back-end performance too, right? For sure. So definitely, you know, when you're talking headless, great, but when you're talking headless e-commerce, that's also the consideration too, in terms of improving performance so that there are less resources on the WordPress server than needs to be. So when you're kind of decoupled land, right? WordPress is no longer responsible for serving images, for running queries, only for like, you know, runtime stuff like add to cart, loading up the cart page and stuff like that. But for 80, 90% of the interactions, WordPress is outside of, you know, running builds, WordPress is out of the picture for sure.
Yeah. And this site was built using Gatsby on the front end. And one of the things I have appreciated, you know, about Gatsby for the last few years is a lot of the conveniences it gives you. So like I'm thinking particularly about images, for example. You know, like in the WordPress world, you know, you can do a lot to optimize your images. You can use, you know, WordPress has support for responsive images for just serving the size that makes sense for the user's device so that they're not pulling down the largest size unnecessarily on a smartphone, for example. There are plugins that you can, you know, you can run your images through to optimize them and make them as small as possible. You know, try to serve other formats, WebP or whatever, and then also serve them from a CDN. So of course, lots of tricks there for that. But I feel like the last few years, we've stepped it up you know, even more since implementing all of those tricks on the web, what's become even more popular is what I've heard called the blur up effect. I don't know how popular that is, but many of our listeners, are probably very familiar. This is where you first hit a page and there's a low res placeholder image. And it's just like a base 64 blurred version of the original image, but it's so minuscule that it can be just inlined into the HTML with, you know, virtually no real impact as far as like the size of that HTML document that's being downloaded. And then as the user scrolls it into view, we're able to use the browser's Intersection Observer API to figure out, is this part in view yet, or is it about to be in view? And then on the fly, swap out the low res placeholder image with, the higher res version that's right for the person's device. Those kinds of experiences are so nice, and make things so quick. So anyways, I think like from the looks of it, you made very heavy use of that on Rudis. Is that right? For all the imagery, all the product photos and so on?
Totally. And for the most part, I'm at a stage in my development career where I want to focus on solving the business problems, right? And those unique ones.
Yep.
And if someone's already, for the most part, solved something, and it's kind of been through a certain level of ringer, like I don't want to spend time reinventing that wheel. So Gatsby, for instance, I know Next has it as well, has a solution for images. So cool, use that. And like, I'm not going to mess with an intersection observer and debouncing stuff when you're scrolling. Like, nah, I ain't got time for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it really shows on the site because especially, given it's a e-commerce site, you kind of assume that it's going to be image heavy, but the site itself is, to put it lightly, incredibly image heavy. So it's awesome that, you're able to take advantage of something that's built into a tool that abstracts it away from you and you don't really have to think about it anymore. And that's just really awesome because I am in the same boat. And specifically in the past, images have provided such a headache on sites. And it's nice to see that going.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Will, like when you even like, responsive images, right? Source set attribute. Like I early on and sometimes, later on, just spent so much time trying to figure out what are the different sizes? Like, what do I have to do like a max clear or, max width here on the sizes attribute? Like what is the right thing? Like, I don't want to have to worry about that stuff. Like, someone has solved that. I just put in, whatever, either it's just, GraphQL query or whatever. And that's kind of solved for me. Cool. Done. Like, let's focus on solving the unique business problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It reminds me of this phrase I've heard, like some of the folks from Gatsby say at different conference talks and things. And that is make the right thing the easy thing, And I think that would apply to like their image, component in the way that they're able to do these low res placeholder images and blur them up and all that kind of stuff. It's so darn easy. It's like developers have no excuse not to do it. Really, it's just like if you follow the docs and wire it up and point to the source image, the way you're supposed to. Gatsby is kind of hands off after that point. To your point, you don't have to do, muck around with Intersection Observer and write this code yourself. It just handles it, which is so nice.
Yep.
Yeah. So what other advantages or disadvantages do you recall, like from this experience, from building this site out? We've talked about a few pros, performance, interaction. Like, I'm sure there's some trade-offs though. Like, what else?
Yeah. Should you think about? I think like, especially with WooCommerce specifically, and if you're using a GraphQL API to kind of consume data from WordPress into whatever front end you're using, for Rudis specifically, they were very dependent on a lot of plugins for a lot of e-commerce functionality, and those weren't part of the GraphQL schema, right? Because obviously when someone like Jason or Jeff are writing the API, they can't write all things for all plugins, right? They write stuff for core, post pages, products, and then everything else, it's up to you, right? So, and obviously plugin authors haven't integrated into GraphQL quite yet because it's just still not as mainstream. We're still kind of feels like early stages. So there are quite a few add-ons that the client was very dependent on at the CMS layer, right? When they're editing products and stuff like that, that I needed to figure out how to expose it to the GraphQL layer so that I can consume it on the Gatsby side of things. For instance, bundle products is a huge one, right? So if you're not familiar with that plugin, that is a plugin that creates a new product type called product bundles. So if you, like, let's just say you sell beds, for instance, right? So all of a sudden you buy the bed, but you want to buy all the different parts and bundle them all together, right? So it's like a parent product with all these child products, right? And so you can, that just wasn't a thing in the API. I didn't know about it. So I had to spend time to, like, first of all, figure out how to customize WP GraphQL and Woo GraphQL to, like, do it, and then learn about that plugin, the internals of that plugin, to be able to pull out data. But the good thing is that I learned a ton about, you know, all the different layers there, whether it's WP GraphQL, Woo GraphQL, or that plugin at the end of the day. So I feel a lot more confident about, now I've got to do that to another plugin. Oh, cool. I've done that already. Like, I've solved theoretically part of that problem. But that's a big deal. Like, if you're all of a sudden saying, yeah, I want to do WooCommerce, and you're dealing with a legacy type of situation where that's part of their workflow, they being the client, you're going to run into where certain data isn't in the API that you need to add to the API, right?
Mm. So how painful was that? Like, did you, at Zeek, did you have somebody that was, you know, could read the docs for WPL and figure out where they needed to hook into it to register new nodes and connections and so on, and then make it happen?
Yes. Yes. It was me, and
that was, you know, you. Just, right.
And that's kind of the thing. Like, you're like trying to build out UIs. You're deep in React land. Right.
Right.
And all of a sudden you've got to, you know, shift gears and get into WordPress, PHP, GraphQL land, and, you know, figure it out, solve the problem. Right. And at the end of the day, that's what it is, you know, solving the problem, figuring out what you're trying to do. The great thing Jason and team have made and has made WP GraphQL customizable, extendable. So all these things were possible. So it wasn't like I had to, you know, fork WP GraphQL and just completely thrash it to solve my specific need. Right. All of that kind of was in the kind of API of WordPress with actions and filters, and, you know, and kind of just figure it out. So it was hard, but it, you know, you just got to figure it out for sure.
Yeah. How about other common pain points for the folks sometimes hit going for a headless setup, things like post previews or doing form submissions, things like that. Anything there?
Yeah, for sure. All those things. I think anything that you're used to, you know, doing in WordPress, you're going to have to find a solution for it in headless, right? And that goes with e-commerce too. But I mean, post previews is for sure. If right now for Rudis, post previews do not work in the traditional sense. So that just wasn't a requirement at the time. It's something that we are discussing with them and trying to find a solution for that. But for sure, if you're going into, whether it's headless WordPress or headless e-commerce, WooCommerce, you turn on, you know, WP GraphQL and you're in full decoupled mode, post previews don't work out of the box, right? So that's something you need to solve. And you guys, I know, have done work on previews and stuff like that, and you probably have talked about it. So that's definitely, for me, it is still a pain point, but it kind of lends on, like, authentication too. And I know, Kellen, you've got a full set of videos on just pure authentication, right? As a normal WordPress developer, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the biggest authentication is the biggest issue when you're going to try to get previews working in a headless site, because on WordPress, you kind of take it for granted. Like, you're on the site, you have your WordPress cookie, you're authenticated, you don't have to worry about it. When you go headless, you just don't have that same level of access. And so even if you manage to, you know, rewrite your URL to your front end, it's not like the URL is just going to load because previews are behind an authentication wall. So, so then you have to tackle that problem. And once you go down the road of authentication, now there's a lot of wiring up that you have to be, you know, capable of doing, and it's a lot of work. And there are, it seems to be like a number of different plugins and tools that you can use to kind of help authentication work in a headless world, but they don't, there's no comprehensive solution for it. So it's more kind of stitching things together.
For sure. I completely agree. Well, it's just for listeners, post previews is something that you're going to run into, and it's still not a very clear solved problem yet in a decoupled state. So that's for sure. And then authentication too, like in normal headless land, if you're just doing, you know, brochure sites, authentication really isn't going to be that big of an issue. But once you start going into like membership sites, gated content, e-commerce, you're going to need authentication. E-commerce, for instance, like you want to write reviews, right? You want someone to be able to check out and be associated with that particular profile and stuff like that, right? So for Rudis, we ended up using the JSON Web Token approach. I am going to switch it over to the cookie approach. I read a blog post, I think by Mike Jolly. He's a big WooCommerce contributor. And I think early on I tried cookies and I ran into just unknown issues with like the secure, non-secure header. Just I was deep into like cookie stuff and not in a good way.
Deep in a pile of cookies.
Deep in a pile of cookies.
Terrible.
Yeah, right.
Or delicious.
And that's just at the time wasn't my skill set and wasn't, you know, where I wanted to be spending time. And tokens felt like a much simpler path and solved, you know, the initial problems and kind of shipped with that. But now I want to revisit cookies because I'm noticing that checkout doesn't associate, you know, user, even though they're authenticated, because when you're token based, right, it's just the requests that are coming in that are authenticated, right? For Rudis specifically, we have a hybrid approach for checkout. And I've talked to Jeff about this, creator of WooGraphQL, in terms of like, how do you deal with checkout for headless e-commerce? Do you want to like get into like PCI compliance stuff and deal with all that stuff? Like, I don't. That's, again, not my skill set. So we decided for Rudis to offload checkout to WordPress because WordPress WooCommerce kind of has already solved that problem of like PCI compliance with your host. The payment gateways expect you to be in WordPress. Maybe you have third-party add-ons that are doing things on the checkout page. And so for us, it just felt like, why like try to build a full-on checkout experience if there really wasn't a huge reason to do so at the time? That doesn't mean that like we're not going to ever do that. But you know, then we had to solve that problem of like, and I blogged about this where like, okay, so how do you hand off, right? Like you're in one domain going to another, whether that's subdomain or completely different domain. So we ended up using, and I had to learn about all like WooCommerce internals in doing so, which is great because I came from a kind of a very high level WooCommerce in terms of like, all right, I just do the UI layer. I just mess with WooCommerce building out themes. I didn't understand the intricacies of sessions, you know, cart sessions and all the things that happen deep into WooCommerce land. And so part of this, I had to kind of learn all that, like, okay, great. There is this concept of a cart session. Well, let me, you know, add that to the query parameter so that when WordPress loads, now I've got some action that's kind of listening, looking for that query parameter. And then I get that and kind of look up the cart and load the cart session on that checkout page, kind of high level explanation. And that worked, and it's worked since in its production. It's taking tons of sales. That works. But the problem with going back to authentication, that's not like a GraphQL request with a authentication header, right? That's just someone loading up WordPress, and WordPress by default is just going to, you know, look up whether, you know, you're authenticated via cookies. And so if someone logs in Gatsby in the Gatsby app, and then they go to checkout, they're going to have to re-log in to authenticate themselves, which sucks, obviously, right? Yeah. And so I want to flip that and just literally change the login strategy from the token to cookies so that it responds with a, you know, set cookie header that's HTTP only. So it's a more kind of, you know, cross-scripting protection, because right now I'm storing the token in local storage, and everywhere you read, they're like, no local storage for your tokens kind of thing. Right. For sure. So it's security, it's UX. And so now if you log in on Gatsby, you'll be able, when you get to the WordPress site, you are already logged in and you can associate your purchase to your profile for sure.
Oh, nice. So right now, a user could check out anonymously. Is that right? Like they never have to log in. They could, you know, populate their cart with whatever products, hit checkout to go to the traditional checkout page, right, that you're using, and then process the payment and all that without any login screens?
Yep.
Okay. When would someone log in? Is this returning customers who want to issue a refund or whatever, look at their purchase history, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So all of my profile stuff is offloaded to WordPress too. So like if you go to Rudis right now, I think like in the footer or the top right, you like my account, that'll take you over to the WordPress instance. And then you're prompted to log in due to that stuff. But why would someone log in? Because they've made prior purchases and they don't want to have to like put in their billing information again, for sure. And like for Rudis, they had, I think, 3 payment gateways, Amazon, PayPal Standard, and PayPal Pro. So like if you're having to rebuild checkout, now you got to figure out how to like support all that stuff. Like that's a ton of work.
Yeah. It's kind of a bummer to me to have to fall back to some traditional WordPress pages, you know, and just think like, oh, it would be so nice for everything to just work perfectly in a decoupled architecture and the user never has to, you know, be sent there. But it makes it, I mean, the reasons you're bringing up are strong arguments to have that approach where you have some pages, you know, still served by WordPress. One thing I'm wondering about is, on the checkout page, just any elements that you have there, like the header and footer, you know, how does that work? Because elsewhere, like the user's journey, the customer's journey up to that point, you know, clicking around the Gatsby site and viewing products and loading up their cart, all of that markup and styles and so on is, of course, like rendered by Gatsby and by React. But for checkout, when you're falling back to the checkout page that WooCommerce, you know, provides, you wouldn't have those same components on the page, right? So do you have like a repo somewhere? Or a private package registry where they're pulled in? Like, what's the approach there to get those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We made some really magic, like, no, not at all. It's literally just, you know, repeating the code. The cool thing is we had a custom theme already because it was legacy. So in this project, we didn't really change designs specifically in the header and footer. So it's still the old WordPress theme that we built for them a few years ago. And so design wise, it's literally the existing theme with the nav and everything like that. Nothing special in terms of like pulling information or anything like that. That was a nice thing. Oh yeah, for sure. And then all the links in there, they have them hard coded to point to the Gatsby. So if someone is on checkout and they happen to like want to, you know, explore the nav instead of actually checking out, it'll bounce them back to Gatsby. And because Gatsby's got the session ID for the cart, if they end up like adding more things, it'll add more things, right? Instead of like, oh, now you got a new cart kind of thing. For sure.
That's so nice. That makes things easy. The reason I mentioned that is I have talked a couple times with Jeff Taylor, you know, the creator of the Woo GraphQL extension, who you mentioned once or twice already. I've asked him about, you know, the checkout page and how all that works. And that's one of the approaches he mentioned. He said like, well, what you could do is if you want a, you know, a uniform header and footer that's the same in both places, you know, you could put that on like a private NPM package or something like that. So that gets pulled down into your front end application. But then when somebody's on the checkout page, you could have, you know, a JS bundle there that pulls that same thing and puts it at the front, at the top and bottom. But that, it seems like a lot though, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, do you want to focus on that? Or like, they've got, and Ruta's got a ton of initiatives getting ready for Black Friday, like that are, where do they want us to focus in on? Like, hey, it works. Cool. Let's focus on, you know, increasing sales.
Right.
And, for sure.
And that checkout page, that's like, if there's a page where you don't want the user get distracted and click a link to, you know, go somewhere else, that's it, right? Like, you want that conversion, that sale to happen. So yeah, it seems like keeping things kind of, you know, minimal is not a bad thing, bad choice to make.
Yeah.
Any other, you know, we started talking about some trade-offs there. So positives were like speed and interactivity, but we also talked about a few pain points as well, such as post previews. You mentioned forms as well. I was going to ask you about that. I noticed like in the footer of the site, there's an email sign up. For example, does that go back to WordPress, or is that like a MailChimp or some other service like that?
Yeah, forms are hard for sure. That specific one in the footer is a marketing kind of form. I believe it's Klaviyo. All the other forms that are on the site, not a ton, kind of contact us, refund stuff. We're just using the Netlify forms. They were on Gravity Forms, and I know, Kellen, you've done a lot of content about integrating Gravity Forms and stuff like that.
Right.
But, you know, at the time that, you know, form for Netlify worked for us, and, you know, they being the client, that Rudis wasn't creating editing forms often, right? It's just one of those, there's a form sitting somewhere and maybe once in a while we need to make a change. It's okay to kind of bring in a developer and, you know, trigger a build to make a change. It just happens so infrequently for sure. And so that worked with us for forms for sure.
Okay. So
I kind of view that as an advantage of going headless. Is like, you can kind of easily interchange some of these different tools. I mean, if your forms want to go to WordPress, great. If you want to do that dynamically and go through all the Gravity Form stuff, great. If you just want to go and copy and paste a snippet of code from some other tool, Netlify Forms or wherever else, you can do that too. And it's pretty seamless and easy to accomplish on the headless WordPress side. With traditional WordPress, it can be easy, but sometimes it can be challenging.
And I think that's a unique challenge too, Will, with e-commerce, right? Going back to putting fewer resources on the WordPress server, right? So if we no longer have WordPress responsible for taking form submissions, and we all know that that's a potential weakness of a WordPress site in terms of, you know, taking entries, database entries, it can get hammered, stuff like that. If I can offload that to something else and not on WordPress, so WordPress is just, all they're caring about is managing the content, taking orders, managing cart, like fewer resources, the better. And I know you guys talked about that on your last podcast with Netlify, with the DevRel team, in terms of like the kind of hot drama between Matt Mullenweg and the Netlify CEO, in terms of like, one is pro headless and one is anti. I'm obviously on the boat of pro, because the more I can decouple services and put less burden on WordPress and still take, you know, take orders, take sales, the better, right? Like, I don't want a Gravity Form vulnerability preventing me from taking orders and not getting any revenue for sure. For sure.
How about the developer experience? Like, you know, if you would have been able to achieve the speeds, you know, that the client was looking for just by applying some caching layers and so on, and did traditionally, you know, WordPress theming, you know, compare that for us with what you ended up doing, which was, you know, the React component based, you know, architecture, but with the trade-offs we've talked about, where you still had to dive into some PHP to accommodate some of the WooCommerce extensions and so on. So like, how did that all feel for you?
I liked it a lot. I am definitely more on the JavaScript side of things and try to focus my career more on that side of things into being a generalist in full stack. And so for me, I like working with JavaScript and I wanted to continue to get better with React. And I felt like something like building e-commerce in React would be a pretty good barometer in terms of pushing the limits and pushing my own limits, right? And making myself feel uncomfortable and all that jazz. And I was able to use a lot of really cool tools that I've been hearing about that I wasn't really able to implement in a traditional WordPress theming environment, like, you know, React testing library, Storybook, you know, Jest testing, all these cool things that you hear about. And you're like, oh, that's cool. Like maybe I did a hello world on the weekend, but like to have something in production and see value or maybe not see value. I was really happy to, you know, be able to do that, for sure. Especially something like I'd heard a lot about Apollo, right? And for me, Apollo was just so obscure. Like, okay, what is that? Yeah. GraphQL. Cool. But like where I'm not going to use that in WordPress land for sure, obviously. You know, I was excited to kind of finally learn Apollo and interact with it. And so for the developer experience for me, because I like to learn and because I love JavaScript, it was definitely a breath of fresh air to kind of get out of the PHP templating side and really focus in on the JavaScript UI side of things with all the tooling involved for sure.
Hmm. So you would do it again, right? No regrets. Like it was a good decision in the end.
Oh yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Nice.
I mean, the site certainly seems like, you know, lightning fast. So I'm sure that the UX is there. So yeah, sounds like the DX is pretty darn good as well. So that's good to hear. How about the clients? We've talked a lot about your team and the work involved to, you know, build out the site. But after that was the new version of Rudis.com was built and then launched. What feedback did you get, like positive and negative? Was the client thrilled with certain aspects of the site? Or they experience like some pain points with some other aspects of the headless, you know, kind of architecture that you had to work around or that kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're pretty fortunate that, you know, our client is really open and they're really great to work with. So it's one of those, it depends in terms of like, is this a right project for you? The client is a big part of that, right? Like how open are they to change and all that stuff? And so they, you know, early on, we had a lot of issues with, you know, builds failing. That's a whole new concept for me as a developer and for a client specifically, right? Like, what does it mean a build fail? Like I click publish and like, why isn't the thing working or why isn't it showing and why is it taking 12 minutes for a build that usually like, you know, goes right away, right? So everything dealing with either the you know, how quickly a build finishes or build fails was a pain point in terms of the client, but not a pain point like, you know, oh, this thing is awful. Why did we do this kind of situation? It's more about, okay, well, this is happening, you know, let's address it, let's fix it, or let's educate. And, you know, once we kind of ironed out some issues in terms of like builds failing, you know, they were really happy and nothing major like that has come up that has like, you know, giving them a poor experience, right? They're focused on sales and does the site work, right? And so it feels fast, it works, they're getting more sales. So that's good in their book for sure.
Yeah. Nice. And you mentioned forms briefly. The client, it sounds like they didn't care too much either way, whether some of this form submission, like the contact form, whether that, you know, went to WordPress and the data was saved there for them to review and follow up on versus the Netlify form solution you landed on. Was that kind of, you know, not really a concern where they were stored after submission?
Yeah, they're not concerned about that. I think for them, the biggest thing is if I tell them it's going to be fewer resources on your WordPress site. So theoretically, the chances of your site going down on Black Friday because now you're getting form submissions and checkout, they're for that for sure. So if they have to change their workflow a little bit and now the email looks different because it comes from Netlify on the submission, they're fine with that. Like, yes, sales for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. You want to, their primary business is, you know, selling apparel and it's the e-commerce side of things and everything else is kind of tangential to that. But, You do not, given that your all of your sales are going through WordPress, even the cart page is still on hosted on your traditional WordPress site. That's the critical piece, and anything else you can offload, it's probably worth, you know, remembering a different URL for stuff
for that benefit. Yeah. I mentioned before we hit the record button here that I plan to do some content on like headless WooCommerce, and I want to plug your blog, so jacobariola.com. You've done some excellent blog posts that I'm definitely going to reference when I get into that for dealing with things like the shopping cart and the checkout and so on. So first off, thanks for putting that out there. But next, I was interested to ask you what your experience was like working with Woo GraphQL. I know, so Jeff Taylor has put a lot of, and I believe several other contributors have put a lot of like time and energy into that, and it's very capable. But I think it has some shortcomings, particularly like documentation. I think Jeff's told me like, yeah, I spend so much of my time between, you know, my day job and other work and just building out the core of what it is. You know, like many open source projects, it's, you know, it's hard to find that extra time to make sure your docs are thorough and up to date and all that. So was that, did you find that or did you find your way around pretty well working with Woo GraphQL?
I found my way to work around with Woo GraphQL pretty easy. And I don't like to use the word easy that often because it's dependent on the person, right?
Right.
But he follows very similar patterns to WP GraphQL with JSON. And so it didn't feel like I was in that big of a different API, you know, in looking at the source code and understanding what was happening when I was working with WP GraphQL or Woo GraphQL, right? So it didn't seem completely different patterns, right?
That's good.
Yeah, they're both object-oriented patterns, tons of actions and filters. And, you know, a lot of times for me, it was a matter of turning on Xdebug and just walking through every little thing, the entire request to see what's hitting, where it's hitting, why is it doing that? Why is it behaving that way? And then, aha, that's why kind of thing, right? The documentation isn't there, but the code is there. You can pop open Xdebug, throw on it's not a line break, it's a... what's the term?
Breakpoint.
Breakpoint. Thank you. Yeah. Throw on a breakpoint and literally just walk through and get an understanding of what's happening behind the scenes.
Nice. Yeah, I've done that many a time. And I think I'm sure it also helps make it seem more seamless. The fact that it's GraphQL, you know, and it has this like strongly typed way of doing things and, you know, WP GraphQL enforces that you use certain hooks and so on. So, probably enforces some consistency, which is great.
Yeah. And Jeff has been really great to communicate with, whether that's in GitHub or the WP GraphQL Slack channel, to kind of, you know, bring up issues. I know there was an issue with like the cart for a while where they had a queuing system, queuing system for the cart to handle concurrent requests by users. So maybe your UI had literally an add to cart button that you can just start firing a bunch of times, right? Okay. So the cart had a queuing system that would literally just take one at a time and have a queue that would add that one thing to cart, next kind of thing. So that, you know, the middle ones don't like all of a sudden get abandoned because of just concurrent requests, right? But you know, our WordPress site was crashing for a while, and we couldn't figure out why. And it turned out it was that, that queuing system, cause there was typo. I forget what it was that was like trying to set transients, but it was all the same transients without getting too much into the weeds of like the issue. I was able just to interface with them, open a ticket and we ended up screen sharing and, you know, working on that together. And for me, it was a learning experience because I really didn't get that deep into the source code to realize, wow, there is a queuing system here. This is kind of what's happening. So it was a learning experience for me. And I think it was great for him that, you know, he was able to kind of work with me and we worked through it together and kind of fixed the issue. Luckily he had a filter in there that allowed me to disable that queuing system because for our case, we didn't have concurrent requests. No one can like fire up the add to cart button 50 million times on a pair of shoes kind of thing. So, good thing is I was able to disable that and a filter until it got fixed. But the point is the collaboration and the engagement is definitely there for sure.
Yeah. And I'm sure he is grateful for that as well, because, you know, especially if something is open source, it's always great when somebody who's not you discovers a bug and even discovers a potential solution to that bug or something like that, so that, you know, it adds value to your product and it doesn't require you to do all of the testing and implementation.
For sure. For sure. I think like once it's out in the wild, you know, you're somewhat dependent on your end users to report those bugs.
Yep.
I wanted to ask next about native mobile apps. I think I saw this somewhere. Tell me if that's true or false, but does Rudis have apps that where they sell their products as well?
Oh, dude. Yeah. So they don't have anything out yet, but it's close. So we are working on something that is a native app that is going to be consuming some of the data from GraphQL. And it's not just like, you know, a full on, you know, clone of the web app. It's, you know, it's part of their native app is going to be having some shopping experience into it. But yeah, so the nice thing is like, because I already knew a lot about the intricacies of the GraphQL API, when, you know, they brought up like native app, that kind of set the stage for a lot of things to be able to make the native app happen seamlessly in terms of like, oh no, well, we've got to, you know, figure out what we can do, what we can't do, so on and so forth. So a lot of stuff, kind of set the stage for the native app really, really nicely for sure.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. So, will it be you working on that native app as well? Like, would you use something like React Native or a similar solution?
No way.
Web technologies or
no way.
Company?
I am not. Okay. I mean, we at Zeek are doing the native app for sure, but I am definitely trying to stay in my lane. I'm not a native app developer, nor am I trying to be. But I am supporting in terms of backend services for stuff on. Stuff on, you know, consuming the WooCommerce API for sure for them.
Yeah. And you know, I don't think someone would have to be a native app developer per se if they were using something like React Native, you know, or native script that lets you use web technologies to build your app. Do you know if that's the plan though, or would they write Swift or and Kotlin or Java, you know, to build it?
The latter. They're definitely doing Swift and then Kotlin on the Android side for sure.
I see.
Okay. Yeah. I'd challenge you there to say, even if you're going to use React Native, it's not like, oh yeah, I know React.
It's the same. Yeah.
And web technologies and I'm also a native app developer using React Native. They are two different things. And if that's not what you're interested in, I mean, there's a learning curve to get up and running with the React Native.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like I don't have time I can learn it, but then to go back 3 months from now and figure out what I did to fix a bug, nope.
Yep, right.
I have a pretty long, extensive past in, not in React Native necessarily, but in kind of the hybrid mobile apps. And I'd say that it's like an art in and of itself to be able to build a mobile app that's hybrid, that works well, and you know, withstands the test of time.
Yeah. It accommodates every platform. Yeah, certainly. Very interesting. Yeah, that'll be very cool though to have some mobile apps that pull some of their data from the GraphQL API. You know, that's another selling point of the decoupled architecture, right? Because if the folks at Zeek, you know, if you applied some caching layers and decided this is, you know, good enough or achieving the speeds we want, left it at that, you know, you might have to do more work for the mobile apps to expose this data. But because with the headless route, it's there already, right? This GraphQL API that you know, is ready to be consumed by whatever client. So that's cool. I haven't heard of too many applications like that.
Yeah. And it's more about optimizing the resources on the server, right? So because we've offloaded all kinds of, you know, secondary things that are not, you know, part of e-commerce centric things. So now if a native app needs to consume data, I'm not as worried, right? Because we're not adding more to the pile of like resources to the e-commerce thing, right? It's like, yeah, this, you need product stuff. This is where to get it, right? As opposed to, well, you don't have to have your forms here. You can offload search to Elasticsearch. You can do other stuff. Like let's strip away some of the things to optimize resources for sales.
Yeah. Nice. So you mentioned that you would do this project again as a headless WordPress project, that worked well. Would you say that also applies more broadly? Like does Zeek Interactive plan to do more headless WordPress in the future? And even beyond that, you know, headless e-commerce, like would you consider doing those types of projects?
Yeah, I think so. Cause I think the space is still continuing to evolve, continuing to get better. I still think there are problems that, you know, still need to be solved. And I know you guys at WP Engine are getting pretty close to launching a lot of, you know, really great solutions to kind of help mitigate that. But I think depending on the goals of the client and resources and all that good stuff, I think headless e-commerce, and especially with headless WooCommerce, is still, you know, a viable option, is something I'll definitely consider moving forward for sure.
Hmm. Cool. That was good. So one question we like to ask a lot of our guests is like where they think things are headed. You know, right now it seems like we're at this crossroads where this idea of decoupling from WordPress, having a separate front end app, like certainly you could do that in the past with like the XML RPC API and then the REST API. Like you could do that, right? But virtually no one did, you know. But at this point, we're actually getting to a stage where it's becoming popular, and you know, companies you've heard of are launching you know, sites with this kind of architecture. So like, where do you think things are going? You know, do you think this headless architecture will continue to grow in popularity, and would it ever surpass, you know, traditional WordPress, or will they both reach a certain percentage and kind of coast for a bit? What do you think?
You had the CEO from Funkhouse on a few episodes ago, right?
Right.
And
he was in your area.
Right? Yeah, I think he's from LA. What is his name again? Gosh, I can't remember.
Drew Baker.
That's it.
So they've got quite a bit of open source things out there, right, for WordPress. And one thing they have is like a headless WordPress theme, right? That like, these are all the things that you need to do to like make your theme headless. And if you start looking at all the things that you need to do, it's kind of a lot, right? And so to answer your question, like, where do I see it going? I don't know, because WordPress wasn't built to be decoupled headless. I don't see attention from core coming that way, right? Like you see Gutenberg and full site editing and all that stuff, but you don't necessarily see anything on headless. So, because it wasn't built for that, it feels like you have to do a lot of, you know, special handling on your WordPress at the theme layer for WordPress to kind of make it work as best it can. That doesn't mean that if you don't do those things, it won't work, right? Because you're still just exposing data via an API, whether that's REST or GraphQL. But you know, there's just a lot you have to do. And so I don't know, and I don't see the attention there for headless. And I see the attention there for Gutenberg. Right. And you know, we can go on a whole episode and talk about Gutenberg headless,
right.
Right? And the challenges dealing with that. And so, if everything is going Gutenberg in terms of attention, and Gutenberg doesn't really play super nice and headless, like where is that going to go? I don't know. Like for Rudis, for instance, we're still on Classic Editor for sure. There's no way I'm slapping on Gutenberg, not because Gutenberg is bad or, you know, have your own opinion about it, but we've had other projects where we've had to deal with Gutenberg and headless integration. And it's been a big cause of pain points. And that's just not a pain point we wanted to deal with Rudis, because their e-commerce, you know, WooCommerce is still dealing with the classic kind of editor UI. They're not in Gutenberg yet. And so we didn't want to take that on. So to answer your question, I don't know where it's going. What I do see is the attention is not there. So that's a little concerning, but the only thing we can do is kind of solve the problems that are in front of us in the short term. And for something like Rudis, headless is a great option right now. Is that going to be great option 3, 4, 5 years ago or 3, 4, 5 years from now? I have no idea.
Yeah, I think there are a number of factors. I mean, one difficulty that Core has moving forward with something like headless is they've historically been very focused on backwards compatibility. So it's difficult to introduce changes that really shake the foundation of WordPress and still maintain that backwards compatibility. The other thing is, you know, the statistic, I guess, is WordPress runs 40% of the web. Most of those sites by volume, not necessarily by traffic, are, you know, very small sites where headless requires a larger development effort right now and probably for the foreseeable future than it does to just spin up a WordPress website. And I think that we'll see where it goes, but it's definitely a challenge for Core to say like, hey, we're going to support headless and still maintain traditional WordPress, you know, within the same package.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with Matt Mullewig saying that they're anti-headless or anti-decoupled, yeah. Right? So I don't see the initiatives like making WordPress more headless friendly, if you will, right?
I think it's going to be, and it already is, but in the future, it's going to be driven by the open source community and not necessarily by, I guess, maybe one day they will make that realization. But
yeah,
you know, it's like WP GraphQL. It's not part of Core, but if you're going to use headless, even if you're not using headless WordPress, if you're going to use the WordPress API at all, you're going to want to use WP GraphQL. So that's already something that exists that's huge and gaining steam that's outside of Core.
Right. Yeah. And you mentioned Gutenberg once already, Jacob. And Will and I were just having a discussion yesterday about where things are going and the fact that there isn't a proper server-side registry of blocks. You know, that data is defined in JavaScript. So you need, you know, because the WordPress server can't parse and understand the JavaScript and give you back that data, and here are the blocks and all of the attributes and other, you know, other associated data. That's, you know, that results in some of the pain points that you were talking about working with Gutenberg in a headless environment, right? And it would at this stage definitely be possible to add that, to add the ability to have a server-side registry of blocks. And it kind of blows my mind that doesn't already exist. Even if, as you said, even if Matt Mullenweg and just the Core contributors and maintainers don't envision headless as important or the future or whatever else. Even that being the case, I still can't believe that we don't have a server-side registry of blocks because WordPress.com has mobile apps and the Calypso desktop app, right? So that means like if on my phone I see that I can still do some things, like if I see that somebody has left a comment, you know, while I'm out and about, I can answer the comment to one of my blog posts, hit submit. And then it uses the REST API to send that data up to my WordPress server and reply to that person. So that's all great. But as far as I know, like those apps are useless for authoring and editing content for any sites that have adopted Gutenberg, right? Because it can't, the mobile client, it can't tell WordPress, give me a list of all the blocks that exist on this, you know, on this particular blog post or this particular page, so that this user could you know, add a new one or change the order and then hit save and save those changes back to the server. Like that's not even possible right now because all we have is these blocks defined in JavaScript. So it just blows my mind that like that's not possible at this stage. And it seems like, you know, it would be, if you want to point the finger at Automattic and say, well, they're so powerful and have so much sway, you know, in the direction the boat is going. Even if that's the case, like it seems like it would be in their best interest to have that server side registry of blocks and have their own mobile and desktop apps, you know, have that capability. So
I thought I saw some movement on registering blocks on the server, but maybe this was like a year ago. Because I know Jason Ball has explained to me, like, and he's written lengthy blog posts and has tickets everywhere about this. And I still don't get, you know, the intricacies of why it's important, other than, like, you know, the server needs to know about these before putting it into the API. But it feels like there's some movement with regards to registering blocks on the server, but maybe I misunderstood what was happening.
Yeah. Not that I'm aware of. I've heard of, like, other like third party block plugins. I've heard of them, you know, writing the plugin so that that data is stored as structured data that you could easily, you know, query for and pull out as JSON. Like CoBlocks, I believe, is one that does something like that. But yeah, as far as I know, all the native, like, core blocks aren't that way. You know, you would have to. That's why folks are still using the WP GraphQL for Gutenberg extension, you know, which basically, like, receives the REST API request for blocks and saves the data somewhere else in the database as in a structured format that can later be, you know, pulled down and queried and so on. So, yeah, I hope we'll get that, though. That server-side registry, that would make things a lot easier.
You just have to, you know, spin up a HTML parser, parse through those comment nodes and figure out what block you're using.
What's the big deal?
See you in 6 months when you're done with that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Jacob, you mentioned you don't want to spend all your time in the nitty-gritty details. Have we got a job for you?
Yeah, exactly.
Writing this parser.
And now anyway, you've written another front-end JavaScript framework.
Yeah. So with that, with all the talk wrapped up with WordPress specifically, like, let's go a little more broad. Like, Jacob, you said you're really into, like, JavaScript and front-end web development. Like, what kind of tech more broadly are you excited about out there, even outside of the WordPress, you know, space?
Yeah, I like frameworks, you know, that have really strong opinions, because a lot of times I just don't want to have to make decisions and spend my time figuring out where I should name things, architect things, get things. And 3 months later, I read a blog post and realize I did it the wrong way. And let me go back and refactor, right? So at Zeek, we do a lot of Laravel things. And so if you're not familiar with Laravel, it's kind of like the Ruby on Rails for, like, PHP, very opinionated PHP framework. But highly, you know, opinionated in how they do things and very clear conventions. And so for the JavaScript side, there really isn't anything like that. It's just kind of like, you know, Wild West a little bit. You know, you've got a lot of the meta frameworks out there, like Next and Gatsby, right? Which are frameworks of a framework, right? Which is but I'm excited about, there's some new ones out there, Redwood.js and Blitz.js. And Blitz, Kellen, you're the one that told me about Blitz in Twitter. You're like, hey, give Blitz a try. They're like, you know, zero API layer kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a cool project.
Oh my gosh.
Have you ever, go ahead.
No, go for it, Will.
I was going to ask if you ever used Ember, because Ember was when it,
never did.
You know, was popular, was like the Ruby on Rails for front-end JavaScript framework, right?
I love Ember, and that's kind of, I don't want to say that's where I first started, but going from WordPress theme developer to JavaScript into JavaScript framework, Ember was the first thing that I looked at. And I really liked Ember a lot for all those kind of conventions and opinions and the community. So for sure, yeah, it kind of, you know, reminds me a little bit of Ember when you're talking about Blitz and Redwood, where they're making these decisions for you so you can focus in on solving your unique business problems. That's it. And so I'm excited about that, you know, definitely learning a lot of new things with regards to, like, Prisma and kind of that space. But kind of doing some Laravel stuff and dealing with, like, stuff like migrations, database migrations, kind of makes things like Prisma make sense to me. Like, okay, yeah, you know, I did that in Laravel. Now I see what that means and all that stuff. So I'm definitely excited about those two and just building a few fun projects on the side with them to kind of kick the tires.
Right. Nice. Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of people these days say that that having a like Postgres database that, that they host like on typically on DigitalOcean, using that with Prisma on top of it is like a super nice setup. Then their JavaScript based app can use Prisma to interact with the database. And
Hasura is really cool. Have you messed around with Hasura?
I haven't.
So they allow you, they have this really cool feature that that allows you to build a unified GraphQL layer. So if you've got WP GraphQL and you've got another piece of data in another place, you can unify that at the Hasura layer to now expose one GraphQL layer to all other consumers. Instead of your consumers going out, you do that at the Hasura layer. And that, I know Will's nodding his head. So Hasura is really cool in terms of like, they do other things besides that. It's just one, you know, feature of their SaaS platform, their SaaS. But that's another thing that I'm kicking the tires with, along with, Blitz and Redwood for sure.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. I know Jason Langsdorf from the Netlify team. I think he's a big Hasura fan. I've heard him say that.
Fun stuff.
Yeah. All right. I think we will wrap things up then. Thank you again for your time, Jacob. Before we stop the recording here, just let folks know like where they can go to find out more about you, about Zeek Interactive, and the kind of things you're working on.
Yeah, Twitter is the best place. That's kind of the only place where I am on the socials. So I'd like to engage there, or if you're on the WP GraphQL Slack. And then for Zeek, just, you know, go to our site, hit us up. I know we're always hiring. So hit us up if you want to work on a lot of different cool technologies, whether that's WordPress, Laravel, Gatsby, Next. We do all the things for sure.
Well, very nice. Thanks again for coming on, and thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you in the next episode.
See ya.